Today on the Cooligans, we bring in an expert to figure out the Vancouver Whitecaps possible relocation situation. The one and only Paul Tenorio of The Athletic joins us to talk all about it.
Bully D. And then we got Luca B. Luca Bombino's on the show. He's a rising star for San Diego and potentially the U.S. men's national team, unless Italy has their way. And we wouldn't want that because we want them to play in World Cups. And then, of course, we talk about what's going on with Inter Miami. Why can't they win at home? Is it Franco Panizzo's fault? We talk about it all and we decide who can they bring in to help them out. That and more today on the Cooligans. It was our birthday.
Yes, it was.
It was kind of crazy. I ain't gonna lie to you.
Yeah, lower that a little bit.
You can lower that. Hold on. We'll try it again. Kind of crazy. Three nights of just going out and having some nice dinners. Going out drinking. I ended up at a private room karaoke place at 2 a.m, belting out Fetty Wap by myself because none of my friends know any Fetty Wap lyrics, which is very...
You went to karaoke by yourself.
No. I was singing that part by myself.
Gotcha.
Imagine a private room karaoke. I'm in the room. I'm in the... Baby, won't you come my way?
Tears rolling down your face.
Just one eye, though. Tears coming down one eye.
This song is not supposed to be that sad, but...
My wife's in the room like, who are you singing to? What you call it? Who's Linda? So I've... What you call it? Like... We had wild parties going out. I would think the star of the show for me was going to a place that does something called a duck festival. It's an Asian restaurant. It's a Chinese restaurant that has flown in a massive Peking duck, a special oven to cook Peking duck.
Like one duck?
No. It's an oven, massive oven, but it's a very special oven that they only make in Hong Kong. Only Hong Kong restaurants tend to have these.
Gotcha.
You can cook Peking duck in other ovens, but this was made specifically for that.
Mm.
And they brought it. They're the only restaurant in New York, or the first restaurant. I don't know if they're the only, but I believe they're still the only restaurant in New York to have it. Dude, it's absolutely, the duck is great, but they do something called the duck festival, which is like I think it's 7 courses in total, right? So you get crispy beef. You get Szechuan shrimp. You get Szechuan pork. You get what was rated the best cold sesame noodles in all of New York City. And I have to say, I agree. There was one other thing I can't remember. Oh, it was like a spicy chicken. Then you get the duck. Then after that, you get something else. I can't remember what. Oh, lamb. You get Szechuan style lamb chops. And then the last course after all that, fried rice. Now, here's my question. Why don't you bring it to me at the beginning so I can have a little bit of all that meat with the rice?
Okay.
Why give me fried rice at the end?
I don't know. Maybe this is what they do in Hong Kong. I don't know.
Think about everything I just said. Crispy beef. You know what that would go great with? Fried rice. Szechuan style pork chops goes amazing with fried rice.
I don't know. I'm not going to argue with the chef here.
Well, let me tell you something. I did. And I was told that's the way we do it. And I was like, you know what? It's good enough for me.
Okay.
Thank you for having me part of it. That was the start of the show. We had a lot of Tsing Tao beer. It was crazy. And then we went to karaoke after that and a couple bars after that. I didn't get home till I average probably getting home around 4 a.m. the last few nights. Crazy. Fun. Good time.
Pretty crazy. I average something about getting home around 7 p.m.
Yeah.
Give or take. We went to Cold Spring.
I've heard it's beautiful. I haven't been.
It's a lovely little town and nice waterfront and stuff like that.
You're like, all right, it's cold. I see the spring. What else you got?
Yeah, we've been there a couple times and it's nice. It's nice.
I wouldn't call it a resort town, but a lot of people go up there for like relaxation. Maybe hiking is big up there.
I don't know if hiking is a thing there, but it is one of those.
I think the train stops there and there's like a trail that you could hike far from the train.
I have not done that. I just kind of walk down like the business district and Carter, go and walk by the water.
Cold Spring, New York.
Cold.
Let's take a look at some of the scenery.
Cold Springs, I believe it's plural.
Oh, there's more than one. Okay. The both springs got together. And you're like, I got an idea.
Oh, no, it's just Cold Spring, not Cold Springs.
Okay, it's just one then.
Cold Spring, New York. Okay. What's taking so long?
Are you bad at Googling?
What's taking so long? You get there. Yeah.
Beautiful homes. This is what old, like, upstate New York should look like. A little bit of Brooklyn.
Yeah.
A little bit of, like... Yeah, when the rails were important.
One of my favorite things is a bookstore on one of these streets, and it has a flag outside of it, a giant flag that says "Ban the fascists, save the books."
Well, not a. Not something I stand behind. Do we even need books? No. I mean, what a beautiful.
Yeah.
It actually says what you just clicked on is a photo of the general store, which is beautiful. And it says Escape Brooklyn, a guide to Cold Spring, New York.
That's what it, even the, actually the, when we were walking around, I was like surprised to see there were a lot of foreigners there. Not a lot of people.
You upset about it?
No.
You're like, nah, in my Cold Spring.
Literally, like, I'm hearing Italian, I'm hearing German, I'm like, why? How are you here about this place? Why
speak
you-
American, says Christian. Why are you Polanco?
Why are you here?
I do. That happens to me every once in a while. Like when I travel, where was I? I was somewhere. I was, I think in Salt Lake, and someone was like, I would like a day in the air in the hotel. And I was like, what? If you're Italian, how'd you end up in Salt Lake? And how'd you end up in this hotel?
Why
of all
here?
Places?
You come to New York. Yeah. I don't even know how I'm going to come across. Yo, we got to go check out Cold Spring, New York.
I'm not going to lie to you. It's beautiful. It's picturesque.
It's lovely.
But how'd you get this pamphlet in Germany?
I'm like, yo, the tourism board for Cold Spring, New York.
They're doing business,
bro. The street team is out here
crazy.
Doing their thing.
They're canvassing at Dusseldorf Airport, which is bananas.
And the fact you getting sales. You getting people to come here?
Bro. It couldn't have been the bookstore. There's other bookstores between here and Frankfurt.
The fact that you're converting leads is crazy.
Bananas, bro. Whoever's doing sales for visitcoldspring.com needs to come on the Cooligans team, dog.
Yeah, you got get on our ad sales team.
So for real, which by the way, you would be the ad sales team.
But the cool thing, my favorite gift from my birthday was my son. He's just turned 3 and he just started writing a little bit, like, you know, he's practicing that in daycare. And my wife had him write his name on my birthday card.
It's beautiful.
Which was, I mean, I opened the card. I'm like, what is...
Yeah, you looked at Helene. Did you write this with your foot? Oh, that's my son?
That's what I thought. It's beautiful.
My C wrote my name.
So that part of it was very sweet. So shout out
to
you.
You gotta get that as a tattoo. Have you ever thought of that? I know a lot of my sister got my grandfather's signature as a tattoo from the last card he ever sent
Interesting.
Her.
Interesting. Okay.
And I have my grandfather writing, I love you. I've thought about keloid, so I can't really, I'm a little afraid to get a tattoo.
Right.
But have you ever thought of that? Have you ever thought of
No, I have not. I've never, I don't have any tattoos. I haven't really ever.
You lack almost any toxicity. Usually like, this is my son. I'm going to get him tattooed on me. He wrote my name.
No, I mean, I'm not saying that I'm like fully against it, but it does not pique my interest.
What if Elaine got that tattoo?
And she
on her neck.
That's her life. And, you know, I didn't realize I married into this ratchet ass family, but I'm happy to.
I will say, you could get a tattoo on your neck. I wouldn't consider ratchet. If it's your first one, though, I got some questions. I got some questions of what led you to that tattoo parlor that day.
I always find it odd, like, but when people do have names, like, are probably fine, but like when they put a baby photo, like a baby photo, they tattoo a baby photo on their body. And it's like, you're going to be in intimate situations where somebody's staring at your child as a baby. Mm. And it's going to be a little bit weird.
Okay. You know what? Never thought of it that way.
So that's why.
And that's why I only ever put the baby on your lower back.
That's right.
It'll
never become an issue. Yeah,
no, just reminds the fellas to pull out, ladies.
With that said,
unless you want another tattoo back here that you're responsible for 18 years.
With that said, welcome to the Cooligans, everybody. We are hot show today. Oh, as always on. Shout out to the whole Yahoo team. We got a hot show today because we're going to be joined by our dear friend of The Athletic, the homie, writer, journalist, the one and only Paul Tenorio, to talk about the Vancouver Whitecaps situation because he's been writing about it and covering it for The Athletic. So we will
talk about how our last conversation on that topic may have saved the Vancouver Whitecaps. And if you think I'm not making that up, then please stick around because we really need folks like you.
Also, we have another guest. We have Luca Bombino from the left back from San Diego FC. Will be joining us in just a moment to talk everything going on with San Diego. And we got to figure out what the hell is this a downfall for Inter Miami, even though they're like in third place in the Eastern Conference. But they have not won at their new stadium, the new stadium.
Yeah.
And we try to figure out why that is. But today, let's start with the Vancouver Whitecaps situation.
The Vancouver Whitecaps situation just took a wild turn. Two potential owners have stepped up to move the team. Wait till you hear one of the cities they may be moving it to. It's ridiculous. So let's get an expert in here to talk about it. This is The Athletic's Paul Tenorio. You're welcome, Corey W7288. It sounds like this is lining up perfectly for season 6 of Welcome to Wrexham. Mm. And Ryan Reynolds, the son, the probably the most famous son of Vancouver that I can think of besides Nardwar, but at least has the money, can actually come in and maybe buy this team. And is it possible that the fact that MLS doesn't have promotion relegation is stopping that? Because there really is no real storyline.
Yeah, or the storyline is a lot shorter, right? It's like, oh, we saved the team. It's a great story for one season of TV, right? And then what creates the drama after? I mean, this is, again, one of the problems that MLS faces is what story are you selling to fans to compel them to watch? But also, I think it's worth mentioning here, like, how absurd and how crazy the prices have gotten for MLS teams. I think Ryan Reynolds got into the Wrexham deal at like $1 million or something like that. I mean, obviously, again, they paid a lot of money into it. They're building the state part of the stadium, and they've put all this money into the players and the team and the operations. But that's a lot different than $450 or $500 million, which also speaks to just kind of these valuations of MLS that have rocketed up around the popularity of the sport in North America and the commercial possibilities. But it also prices some owners out of being able to buy MLS teams. So all of that factors in. But yeah, I mean, they need, maybe he can be a part of a group in the face of the group that helps keep a team in his hometown. But it is a much more expensive venture.
Where are we at currently? Because as of right now, your last article, I believe, was about the potential ownership group that is willing to buy the Vancouver Whitecaps and with the intention of moving them to Las Vegas. Obviously, it's very upsetting to a lot of people. But where are we at now with the situation?
Yeah. I mean, I think we're kind of up in the air, very much up in the air. When I talk to people in the different circles, I'm hearing two different stories that are very, very different from each other. The first being, hey, like this offer in Vegas is moving quickly. This could happen faster than you realize. You know, this is on the path to Vegas. And then you hear the other side, which is like, hey, MLS wants to keep this team in Vancouver. The discussions that they had during the FIFA Congress with the politicians were very real, very productive. It's, you know, the community of Vancouver has really stepped up and they're intent on finding a solution. So, you know, it does still feel like there are decisions still yet to be made. And I think that realistically, MLS does see the value that they have in the market in Vancouver, but that doesn't erase what they see as business issues that they aren't going to be able to overcome if they stay the same. So it's about, you know, can they have a real stadium solution? And it has to be one that I think, you know, is more than just a concept of a stadium, to put it lightly. Like, it's got to be like, hey, we have a 3 to 4 year path and a bridge deal to make the BC Place financials work in the meantime.
You actually talked about the financials, and this conversation's come up a lot. When we had Brad Sims in here, he talks about how important and like essentially important it is to have game day revenue with your own stadium and why that's a big push for them to build their own stadium. Where exactly do the Whitecaps sort of rank and how far behind are they in match day revenue and sort of just the financial health of the club?
Yeah, dead last in Major League Soccer. Jeez. I mean, and you know, I've had certain executives at teams tell me that their numbers in Vancouver look like MLS numbers from 2007, 2008, which is not a good sign. We have to remember, you know, as I'm sure when you talk to Brad Sims, he lays this out, you know, MLS is a business that isn't like the rest of the pro leagues in the United States or in North America, right? Because the media deal isn't big enough yet. Those leagues, the NFL, NHL, Major League Baseball, NBA, they get the vast majority of their revenue from those media deals. In MLS, the vast majority of their revenue comes from game day, ticket sales, suite sales, sponsorship deals, marketing, naming rights. Vancouver gets almost none of that. And that is what the MLS business currently is. Now, they're in a key moment of transition. The league is trying to go from a local business, a very strong local business, into a national and global business. And that's, you know, everything that we're seeing behind the scenes at the board level is about that level of growth for Major League Soccer. But Vancouver doesn't have the robust local business the way other MLS teams do. And that's why 100 people spoke to Vancouver ownership about buying the team, and none of them want to buy it because the financials just don't work.
Yeah, I mean, hearing that, the part of me is like, it's hard for me to feel bad for any billionaire owner of any team, right? So I understand the, you know, when I saw the number, I think it was in the Save the Caps website when they put out the statement about the 12% like match day revenue or something like that. Like, I mean, 12 is just, I'm not necessarily trying to feel bad or show that much sympathy to these very wealthy people, but 12% seems like, at the very least, not a super strong incentive to not even just like to invest in the team to really, because the returns are not like super high, but it just seems so gross to move the team, right? Like at the very least,
if it doesn't make money though, you can't. What are you going to do?
But 12% is not zero either, right? You bought the team. You did buy the team. Right. I think this is now the bigger conversation about like the single entity system, and then the you buy a team with the hope of selling it in the future. And clearly the Vancouver Whitecaps owners are like, this is what a better time to cash out. I mean, we would get an insane return by selling the team, and then the new owners dealing with the brunt of if the team moves and stuff like that. But is there any, like, all the details about like them getting their own stadium, is that even a possibility? Is there any ways for it to work financially for the current owners, for them to stay in Vancouver?
Yeah, I'm not sure that the current owners are going to stay in no matter what. I think there's some levels to your point of like estate planning. The Kerfoot family has been involved in a very long time. And I think we also need to be careful how we do the math. In terms of, I see some Vancouver fans putting up there, you know, they bought in for $4 million and now they're going to sell for $500 million. Well, yeah, well, we just talked about the fact that they don't really have much revenue. What do their losses look like for the last 15 years? Right. You got to factor that into the investment as well. That being said, I think this really puts a spotlight on the debate of kind of the way we operate as sports teams in North America and the way soccer teams are operated around the world, where, you know, these are kind of community trusts. The idea is like that these teams represent their community, that they're a part of the fabric of the community, that generations can grow up rooting for these teams and pass that fandom down from grandfather to father to son, and so on and so forth. And, you know, I take my son and my daughter to Chicago Fire games, and, you know, hopefully they'll catch on and they'll want to take their kids one day.
Why are you punishing them?
I know that is
what did
very
they do wrong,
true.
Dude?
It's very true. When they're bad, we go out to Bridgeview. We wait. We don't even go to the Soldier Field games. We wait till they're back in Bridgeview. But yeah, that's the hope, right? The idea of building Major League Soccer is that they'll create that history that already exists in some American sports. But when we talk about like European football, this would never happen, picking up and moving a team. And it's become sort of normalized because it's happened in other North American sports. But I do think we have to recognize that the Whitecaps are one of the most historic teams in Major League Soccer. Like, they have a history that goes back to the 1970s, to the NASL days. And that's not something that you can give up lightly. Like, you don't know what the crowds are going to look like in Las Vegas, or if they're going to be long-term crowds. There always is that bump with expansion teams, right? When they first land there, when we think about early Atlanta United, how good they were, how fun they were, that stadium was full. And now look, right? Like, they're not good and no one's in the stadium. And, you know, it matters to have teams that have history and that have gone through ups and downs and struggles and gone through those cycles. 27,000 people the other day to watch the last home game in Vancouver until after the World Cup, right? I mean, that's something MLS isn't going to just walk away from. So yes, the stadium deal is being discussed. They have to find a site that works. They have to find a path forward to make it work. But the reality is the timeline to get that deal done is very short. And you guys are in New York. You know how long it took to get NYCFC Stadium over the line. I'm from DC. I'm in DC now. I covered the DC Stadium deal for a decade before it actually happened on the Southwest waterfront. These deals take time. So hopefully this can get done in time. But when you have another ownership group sitting there saying, hey, I got a few hundred million dollars I'm looking to put into Major League Soccer, that, I think, obviously changes the equation a bit.
I have a couple questions, and I want to ask about Phoenix maybe sort of popping up. You've reported as a potential. I know Phoenix Rising has been trying for years. Didier Drogba, when he was there, was trying for years to get him in MLS. But I guess my question is, why not? How is BC Place not coming to the table to try to negotiate something? Because I would assume, while they can't give the Whitecaps everything they want, I would assume losing the Whitecaps as such a consistent renter of this building is also going to mean a loss for them.
Yeah, of course. You know, MLS teams are good tenants, right? They fill up a lot of dates, usually around 20 home dates a year, plus potentially playoffs, which we know Vancouver right now is going to be there. So I think that is where the discussion has to start, because we know even if you struck a stadium deal tomorrow, it's going to take 3 or 4 years to get that stadium built, at least. So there has to be something on the table to say, okay, this is the amount of percentage of revenue that you can control, the suite sales that you'll get that make it a little bit better, you know, the lottery sponsorship where, you know, I've been told that millions of dollars go to the NHL team through kind of the Canadian lottery. You know, can more of that go to the MLS team? Can they maybe sell the naming rights and get a percentage of the naming rights? Ways to make it financially a little bit more attractive in the short term while they wait for that kind of bigger back end of the deal where you have your own stadium, you control your dates, you control all of the revenue. That's got to be a part of this. And I think it's got to be on the front burner is, okay, this is the bridge deal that gets us to the stadium.
It's also odd to me that I assume this has been the arrangement for a long time for the Whitecaps and BC Place and for... How long? When did they get to MLS? Early 2010s or something?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, for this has been a long time. I'm sure I would imagine they were trying to build a stadium and trying to figure these things out. And the fact that it's gotten to this point where it's like we're just a couple months away from the team possibly moving, it's just like a mishandling, I think, from the Whitecaps, from the Canadian government, and from Major League Soccer. It's kind of crazy that we're like in this situation. My first thought is, do you think, we were having this debate the other day about the Save the Crew movement. When we went to, we did a, in 2018, you were part of the World Cup Comedy Tour. You were in Atlanta with us and you joined us on stage.
On stage.
But before that, we were in Columbus. And the fans there, this was in the heart of the Save the Crew movement where we thought they're probably losing this team. This is kind of crazy. We went to we did the show. It was a comedy club full of Columbus Crew fans. And they were adamant the team was not leaving. I was just like, I walked out of that comedy club being like, wow, I think these people are actually doing something. Could something similar happen with a groundswell of support from the Vancouver Whitecaps fans?
I think so, because the formula that worked in Columbus will work in a lot of markets, right? It starts with activating the local businesses, finding people that want to put money into the team and say, hey, if you stay here, we're going to sign this sponsorship deal with you and this sponsorship. We'll buy a suite at the stadium. You know, those are things that actually matter, right? They add revenue to the teams. They show the support of the community. And those business leaders also can apply pressure on the politicians that we don't want to allow this to happen for this reason and this reason and this reason. And of course, there was the biggest factor in Columbus. They found a billionaire owner who was willing to build a stadium in Columbus. And that's what really kept the team. So, you know, when we talk about Vancouver, let's not forget, they've been for sale for 18 months looking for an owner. And so that is still the most important part. Can they put together enough of a deal with the province and with the city that they can go to an owner that's interested in keeping the team in Vancouver to say, look, we're not setting you up for failure here. There is a path forward with this business. And the Save the Caps movement is a big part of that, because you have to apply pressure to these politicians for them to say, hey, this is high up on my priority list. And you're right, Vancouver has looked for a stadium for a long time. They've been through multiple phases of this. This is not a new problem. It's just now all come to a head because you have an ownership group that's saying, hey, we're ready to get out. You know, we've invested as much as we're willing to invest. You know, for whatever reason, we're going to back out of this, and we need somebody to come in and take over in order to see it forward. And to this point, they just haven't found that person that's saying, yeah, I'll buy it and I'll keep it in Vancouver and I'll commit to being the face of the Save the Caps movement. I think we need kind of the Haslam figure to come in and say, okay, the plan is here, the land is there, I will build the stadium and I will be kind of the person that keeps the Caps in Vancouver. And, you know, it's just a matter of, can they make it attractive enough for an owner to come in and do that? And right now, I don't know.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
I remember the owner of Bournemouth when he was on Morning Footy
a couple years ago.
I think you asked him about this, and he was like, I wouldn't even bother with getting an MLS team. Like, it's way too expensive. And when a super old white guy who's a billionaire is telling you like something's too expensive, right. I'm like, yo, I think the eggs are expensive.
Right. When a guy fires his help because the eggs were running. Tells you it's too expensive to buy an MLS club. You listen, I guess in all reality, here's my real question. I truly believe that the Art Modell law, I don't know the exact name for the law, kind of really helped keep Columbus in place. I don't know what the Canadian laws are like about moving a club. But in the end, is it possible that we don't have a Las Vegas Whitecaps, which makes no goddamn sense? It makes no sense like Utah Jazz or Los Angeles Lakers. Can we keep the Whitecaps name? Being a single entity, this feels like it's a possibility. Can we keep the Whitecaps name sort of dormant on ice in Vancouver for the possibility that someone else buys that franchise and Las Vegas or Phoenix gets their own? And I want to extend that. Do we see a world where in a few years there are no Canadian teams in MLS?
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, you just basically laid out what MLS did the last time that they had a team that relocated, right? When they went from San Jose to Houston, MLS said, San Jose is keeping the history of the club there, and we're going to be back in a few years. We just need to find a buyer, and we need to find a stadium. We're moving this club to Houston, but we're coming back to San Jose. And they did a couple years later. So I do think it is possible that they relocate a team to Las Vegas and say, okay, Vancouver, you've got the history of the Whitecaps still here, and you have X number of years to execute this deal at this price point to come back into the league. And in a way, that also maybe makes MLS owners happier, right? If they can say, okay, actually, we're not selling the Whitecaps, or we're working a deal where we're going to still get our full expansion fee. So like, it'll be a $300 million relocation fee, and the Whitecaps can come in for a reduced $300 million expansion fee rate, and they get their $600 million for what the expansion fee would have been for just Vegas, right? So I could see something like that happening. But yeah, there also does have to be a conversation long-term about what is the place for Canada and MLS if Vancouver leaves, because Montreal has also been discussed as a team that's potentially for sale. And so if you lose Vancouver and then somebody buys Montreal and moves them, now Toronto's the last man standing. And what does the role of Canada in MLS start to look like, especially as the Canadian Premier League continues to grow? You know, I think that's a much, much longer timeline and story to keep an eye on. But certainly Vancouver moving out of MLS would have to start those conversations.
Yeah, I'm sure the Saputo family is like, hey, you got any
How
better?
Many millions?
How many millions? We haven't invested in a designated player in over a decade. We good?
Yeah.
So just to put a button on this, give us your honest over on.
Well, let's ask like Phoenix. Do we think Phoenix is a real player, or is Las Vegas the most likely landing spot?
Yeah, Las Vegas is in pole position for sure. I mean, you've got an owner who's put the money on the table, right? And that goes a long way, saying, look, here's how much I'm willing to buy. I'm willing to pay this relocation fee, and I'm going to build a stadium. So Phoenix has got to at least match that. But they are the other market that I was told kind of has jumped to the front. You know, obviously Indianapolis, Sacramento have also expressed interest in bringing an MLS team to those cities. But the two I was told were kind of being taken more seriously in regards to Vancouver and potential relocation was Vegas and Phoenix. But I do think Vegas is very far and away the front runner if this team is to relocate soon. So that part of it, I think, is, now Phoenix is going to have to look. But again, you know, like I mentioned, there are a lot of MLS teams for sale right now. You know, Montreal has been discussed in kind of these circles for a while. San Jose has been on the market. You know, it'll be interesting to see what starts to happen coming out of the World Cup, whether, you know, and especially with where MLS could go. This is where I plug my book, guys. In The Messi Effect, I write about MLS needing to take a leap in what they have in the product on the field. That costs more money, right? So if they change the roster rules and they're spending more money, there might be a few owners who are saying, I don't know that I can afford to be with this league on the next step. Yeah. And so we might start to see new investors come into Major League Soccer. And I think that opens up the possibility for potential further relocation or expansion.
It's just the markets that you mentioned, it's disappointing because we've seen the attempted bids from Indianapolis or in the 11, Sac Republic, like these teams that have you know, they have support. They have fans that would love the opportunity to get into the first division. San Diego is another example of, like, you know, the Loyal end up folding because of San Diego FC. And, but, you know, by what you're saying, it's really just like, you know, bringing in a team that has a groundswell of support is not as attractive or lucrative as just a billionaire that is willing to throw in a whole bunch of money. Who cares if we bring in new people, new branding or whatever? So it's disappointing that because I feel like MLS in the past did do that. They were the Timbers, the Sounder. We have these fan bases already installed. Let's just bring them in.
It's too expensive.
And now it's just like, now it's just so expensive that even those markets that are already installed, if they don't have a billionaire with deep pockets, they can't join the league. So, yeah, that part of it is a bummer, to say the least. I do want to say this, what I was going to ask before, but just give us your honest over under. What percentage chance do you put on the Whitecaps still being in Vancouver by the start of the 2027 MLS season?
I would say for the start of 2027, I'll put it at 70-30. And I would say the long-term odds, I'd still probably make it like 55-45 that they stay in Vancouver. But that's a little scary. Yeah. It's not much better than a coin flip, right? I don't know how quickly this will move. Even if somebody buys the team, you know, the Gustafsons buy the team tomorrow, how quickly would they be able to get them to Vegas? Would there be one last season? How awkward would that be? You know, I'm sure the league wants to avoid what happened with the Save the Crew moment. That was not positive for Don Garver and Major League Soccer. But I'm throwing my kind of momentum behind Vancouver winning out here. I do think it has ignited the politicians. And I do think also it behooves MLS potentially to make this work in Vancouver and say, okay, we're ready to go to 32 teams. We'll take $600 million from you in Vegas. We'll take $600 million from you in Vegas.
Right.
And everyone wins. So that's kind of what I'm betting
on. By nobody winning.
Paul, well, everybody go pick up Paul's book, The Messi Effect.
My hot take, by the way, is that in 10 years from now, the Whitecaps will be in the Canadian Premier League. That's my hot take.
Okay. Look at that.
Within some time. It just feels like they'll just start. They'll be bigger enough. They can start buying up some of those franchises.
That is why you're not the journalist.
Yeah. Well, I talk to nobody. My source is his brain right here.
We'll come back. We'll come back and clip this in 10 years. He'll rub it in both of our faces.
We shall see.
Bro, watch. And the Knicks will have won a championship by then.
Paul Tenorio of The Athletic. Always an honor, man. Thank you so much for joining us, brother.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Of course. And let's get you back in to talk about the Messi effect.
Yeah.
Christian, I'm excited. One, because we're interviewing a future superstar.
Sure.
Two, he also sounds like his name sounds like an extra from Sopranos.
Yeah, bro, that's the best
part.
I mean, this is one of those names, like, you know, I'm sure people try to make fun of him growing up, and he's like, nah, I'm gonna call my dad.
Yeah. Right? Also, you can't wear a suit when your name when you wear a suit and this is your name, people get scared, bro. Ladies and gentlemen, defender, superstar, future superstar from San Diego FC, the one, the only, Luca Bambino.
Luca, what's good, bro? I mean,
thank you for having me, guys.
Absolute honor, bro. But I mean, we'll start right there. I mean, you got one of our favorite names in Major League Soccer, bro. It's fantastic, right? Can you talk about what it's like growing up with that name? And was it ever a discussion or an issue in your life at all?
No, it wasn't too bad. I got a couple like silly nicknames like Bambi and Baby and stuff like that, but it wasn't too bad. Actually, I felt like my name was not like cool enough when I was a kid, but now it's... Yeah, no,
that's
matured
like the craziest thing pretty I've sweet. Ever heard. Yeah. Luca Bambino, you almost have to say like from Luca Bambino from the West Side. You know what I mean? Like this.
Luca Bambino is also one of those names that you can't say just one name. I can't just call you Luca. It's Luca Bambino.
Yeah,
it's
of course.
It's like Declan Rice. You can't just say Declan or Rice. It sounds weird. So, but no. Yeah.
If I tell my wife I just interviewed Luca Bambino, she's gonna be like, "You're not gambling again, are you?" You know? That's such a powerful name. No way it's not cool.
Luca, let's just start. Look, you. I think your two seasons so far with San Diego FC, I think have been a great start. I mean, what can you say about joining the team and just the, I mean, last season was, I think, for an expansion team, is absolutely remarkable. So being a part of that journey, what's it been like for you so far?
Yeah, no, it's been great. Obviously, the last year has actually kind of flown by for me. I've just been taking every day, one day at a time and learning as much as I can. I think for my development, it's been great, not only as a player, but also as a person. Moving to a new city also has helped with that. But yeah, I've enjoyed every minute of it, and I feel like my football is really flourishing, so I can't ask for more.
I mean, you said you moved to a new city, but it's not that far. It's about a two-hour drive. From where you're from, how many times has the family stopped over just to be like, let me do the dishes, let me clean up around here,
do his laundry,
because I feel like you're not that far.
Yeah, my mom loves to stop over and try to do like all my chores, and I'm like, Mom, it's okay, like I've been doing this for a while now, you know, like you can trust me to do my dishes, it's okay. But yeah, she does try to come in and help me out as much as she can, and I think she just misses me, so.
In fact, regarding that move from, you know, you're an LAFC homegrown, you make the switch to San Diego, knowing that they went in all in on you and wanted to make that trade permanent. That must have been a really like sort of validating moment for you. What's the moment that you thought to yourself, this is where I want to make my home? I can have much more impact here.
That's a great question. Actually, I think that was in maybe within 2 weeks of being here. I really felt like the warmth of the environment and everybody kind of just coming around me to support me as soon as I stepped on the training field. And I felt really happy. I felt like I had the confidence of everyone around me to just go out and play football and do the thing I love. So, yeah, since then I haven't looked back, and I'm really proud of the way that I've handled the situation and taken the opportunity.
All right. Well, you know, you're our first San Diego FC player that we've had on. And last season, for almost for any expansion team, the expectation is really not that high, right? I mean, I think most other like MLS fan bases are like, oh, there's a new team, not much. You know, we understand if they don't get they don't figure out very quickly. But San Diego FC figured out pretty quickly. Can you talk about what made that whole project work so quickly? Because all the stories were like, especially last season, were basically like, oh, these guys they only met each other 6 weeks ago and look at how they're playing. So what made it so special so quickly?
Yeah, I think we can attribute that to how much work went into finding good people first. I haven't come across a single bad character here in San Diego. I'm made friends with pretty much everybody in the club, as well as all the supporters. And I think with that basis, we set a strong expectation for ourselves in that first year, because we know that 90 minutes of football, we can control what we can control. And it doesn't really matter what the opponent's going to throw at us. If we can just do what we're good at and we're strong with, then we know we can go out and beat any opponent on the day. So I think having the strong basis of like people first, building those relationships really early on was great for us.
Obviously, we joked a little bit about your name, but you know that comes from your Italian background, which you have the ability to play, to represent Italy on a national team, if you want. You also obviously can represent the U.S. Where's your heart at right now? And how much are your uncles trying to get you to put on the Azzurri?
No, that's a good question. And to be honest with you, I'm very prideful of my heritage. I grew up watching Italy and the U.S. on the TV all the time. So I have a lot of pride in both nations. And right now, I haven't made a decision as of yet.
Okay. Well, if you want to play in the World Cup, I suggest you pick the U.S.
Well, yeah.
Italy's struggling a little bit.
Right now, wow. Italy are making the decision for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it's more of a Euros. It's more of a Euros thing if you want to play.
Low blow, guys. Low blow.
Respectfully.
It's been 12 years. Come on, man.
I want to talk
Italy.
Come on. We got it, bro. We can relate to Gen Z, bro. Come we on, good, now. Bro. So the I want to talk about obviously being fairly new to the league and you know whether it's MLS Next and or the first team. Every player has their like welcome to the pros moment. And being a young dude, when did you realize that moment? When did it happen? Was it a particular player? Was it a particular moment that you were like, yo, this is a different level?
Yeah, it's a pretty funny story, actually. I made my debut in Salt Lake last year, pretty early on. I think it was in March. And I came on, and I think it was my first or second touch. I received a ball from the midfield, and I went to play like a quick combo around the corner of a forward who was stepping out to defend me. And I got the meanest arm bar, like straight to the rib cage. And I lost all the air in my body. And I went down and I was like, oh my gosh.
Bro.
And we were in altitude, so it took me a while to recover. But yeah, I remember getting up and I was like, okay, I'm not going to get these calls anymore. Like, I kind of got to man up. And yeah, I think that was it.
And that's
how do you man up to get air in your lungs? That's a different level.
Yeah, just brace, I guess. I don't know.
But and also from a forward, it's kind of wild too. You wouldn't necessarily expect that, but I'm sure they're like, oh, this is a young dude. Let me see if I can rattle him a little bit.
He gonna learn.
Yeah, and they were right. They were right.
And they rattled got me. I became.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. Which we're calling. In fact, speaking of like sometimes you get like those moments from the older players, you trained a little bit with Chiellini. I know he was like a big idol of yours growing up and whatnot. Is there anything you learned from him? Is there one like little nugget you could give us that we wouldn't know just from watching him?
Yeah. I can think of a few examples, but you know, obviously he was a top professional and learning his like training habits and pre-training habits were really important. But I remember there was a time in training, I was on his team in 11-a-side and we were defending across from the right side. And I thought that like we had the situation covered and I was just like kind of defending my guy at the back post and the play ended and he turns around and he's like, you have to get here. And he pointed like exactly where he wanted me. And I will never forget that because now every time I'm tracking back, I see Chiellini's face and him telling me to get to the back post. So, yeah, that's definitely stuck with me.
He seemed like such a fun guy on camera, but I'm assuming in training he's pretty intense.
Yeah, pretty intense, but he's a great human. So it's always going to be like he'll kick you in the butt a little bit and then smile at you and laugh with you. So sure. It's all good.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen the interactions at Juve when with Weston McKennie in that like documentary with the ranch and everything. And you could clearly see there's a lighthearted side, but you don't get to be Giorgio Chiellini without being a dog on the pitch.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, or maybe right. It's when he got exactly.
Bit. Oh, well, maybe, yeah, maybe that.
Wow.
Yeah, maybe that's.
Wow.
He got bit by a radioactive Luis Suarez.
And it made him.
Man, you got to play against this guy. I shouldn't be making those jokes.
That is the first time I've heard that theory.
Oh, yeah. Right.
You know what I mean? Just think about it in the future. You know what I mean?
So given that San Diego, you know, are in their second season, I want to ask just about, it's rare to have an expansion team and then next season they're playing in Champions Cup. I mean, it's pretty wild. But I want to ask about just that, your experience with that. But then also, if given that you're helping build the culture of that team, if somebody said, oh, they're watching San Diego FC and they say, man, that's a Bombino style team. What would they be seeing on the field if somebody described San Diego FC like that?
Well, first and foremost, I think what they would see is a team that never gives up. I pride myself on, you know, fighting until the last minute. But in terms of like playing style, I'd say a team that's very dynamic, quickly can go from defense to attack, but also knows when to retain possession. I've learned a lot of that here in San Diego, so it's probably gonna look pretty similar in a few years. But yeah, I'd say it's a team that has a lot of fight, a lot of grit, but also loves to bring some flair into the game.
Okay. I'll say you're half our age and you're way more mature than we'll ever be. So props to you and your family for that. But I want to ask about, you know, as you get older, I'm sure there's every MLS player, you know, it's a great league to showcase yourself on and maybe get a chance to play in Europe and test yourself at those levels. Is there a club you grew up loving that you would love to play for? Do you have the dream of Europe? Or are you just happy where you're at right now?
Yeah, I mean, me and my dad always grew up, I grew up with my dad watching Serie A on TV. And obviously with our heritage, I'd love to play in Italy at some point. That is a big dream of mine. As to which club, I won't say it's, you know.
It will cause contract negotiation issues. Yes,
for sure.
No. Nothing like that. Nothing like that. But yeah, I would love to play in Italy. It's a big dream of mine. And obviously the culture there is really nice. And being close to some of my extended family would be great.
Okay. Cool. How's your Italian, by the way? Did you grow up speaking Italian?
Is it molto buono?
It's getting there. Okay. It's getting there. I didn't grow up with it, which looking back was probably not very wise, but I'm trying to catch up right now.
Right, right, yeah. Because, I mean, you watch some of these players that play in Europe and they all speak like 4 or 5 languages. I'm sure some of the players on your team also speak like 4 or 5 languages, and it makes you feel bad. I would feel bad.
Yeah, I feel terrible. I feel really bad.
My wife is currently getting her Italian citizenship. Do you know where your family's from in Italy?
Yeah. So both my parents' sides are from Sicily. My dad's side is from Palermo, and my mom's side is from Noto. So both on the island, but on polar opposites.
Bro, I know those arguments are crazy. Right? My wife's got Sicilian in her family. Wow, they're basically the Latinos of the Mediterranean. We're both Latino.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. It gets pretty loud at dinner sometimes. Yeah.
I know why you have the composure you have now when stuff gets chaotic on the pitch.
Oh, yeah. I've been trained since I was a kid. Don't worry. Yeah.
Somebody burns the cutlet. You're like, no, I'm prepared for this.
All right. So I want to ask for people, you know, our show, you know, it's a comedy show. So there are some people that are newer to soccer or not as familiar with it. But defenders obviously don't get a lot of glory. But watching you play, you sometimes in the limelight, especially going forward. But, you know, you obviously you run backward, you tackle, you do so many things. What's the one secret thrill of playing left back that attackers may not understand, or maybe just even people that don't fully understand the game or know the game too well?
Yeah, so as a defender especially, I take a lot of pride in making sure that the forward on the other team does not have fun the night that we play. So if I can just win every single duel or as many as I can and just try to get his head down, I don't like to make people feel bad, but that is something that makes me happy. And then as soon as that's down and he's like now tracking back to defend, if I can sprint by him as fast as I possibly can and then see his eyes light up with worry, that's really fun for me.
Okay.
Yeah. In fact, Italian teams in Serie A are doing this. Like Bastoni does this at a high level. Calafiori, before he moved to Arsenal, did this. The defenders are almost sometimes being put in a position to be a number 10. You know, you bring the ball up, you don't have anyone crowding around you, you get a little bit more of a moment, you're making line breaking passes. Are those the moments where you're like, you about to see what Luca Bambino can do? Or is that a moment where you're like, dog, I just want to defend. Why am I up here right now?
No, no, I do enjoy being on the ball. It's great. I think my position allows for that really well because, I'm back there to defend primarily. But like you said, once we go forward, there's not a ton of cover on the fullbacks. So there's a lot of space for me to make plays and show my creativity on the ball. So I do take a lot of pride in that as well. And I hope it translates to the fans watching.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of like fullbacks, you know, we always hear the stories about like used to be wingers or used to be strikers and stuff like that. What has been your journey to left back? Have you played left back for a long time, but you seem pretty good on the ball. I imagine you started up top.
Yeah, thank you. I did. I started as like a 9/10 when I was a kid. And then I tried out at the LAFC Academy as a winger. And I think within like the first week of training, I converted to a fullback. And I wasn't necessarily happy with it at the time or the following years. But I've grown to love the role and make it my own.
Yeah, corners is your moment to shine, baby. Let me ask you a question, because I know there's a lot of argument about, like, for people on the East Coast, everyone has an opinion on L.A., but everyone seems to love San Diego, right? Yeah. Unless you're from L.A., and then there's a rivalry there. I've done that drive once, and my favorite part of it was stopping at the In-N-Out in UC Irvine. That was incredible. Besides the view, that's the best In-N-Out I've ever been in. But give me one pro of being someone from LA who now lives in San Diego. Give me a pro for San Diego and give me the biggest con for San Diego. And they can't be friends or family. We don't care about that.
Understood. Well, con, I would say, I'm just a little bit further from family. Also, we don't have the bigger airport, but that's really not too bad. I don't like going to LAX anyways. I don't think anybody does.
Yeah.
But yeah, a con, it's hard to find one, honestly. I think the commute back to LA to see my family is the only thing I can find personally. But there are so many pros. Like, as soon as I got here, the warmth of the community, it's a lot slower here. There's a lot less like hustle and bustle. Everybody's pretty nice. Like, just people you encounter on the street. The weather is perfect. The beaches are pristine. I can't really find anything to complain about. But yeah, the way of life here is really nice. It's always sunny. You can go out in your shorts and t-shirt whenever you want. It's great. Yeah.
Can I give you my con of San Diego?
Sure.
This is sure. I'm going to sound super East Coast right now, but it's, you know, remember recess in school?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's attitude in San Diego. Yeah, yeah. Everyone's
No one's in a bad mood.
I've never seen adults skip. You know what I mean? Why are you skipping? Everyone's in such a positive, fun mood. It's like, does anyone work? You know, I'm like, I'm so much more stressed than everyone else.
How does the economy run out here? What's it doing?
Why are bars full at noon on a Tuesday? Everyone's too relaxed out here.
Yeah, it's like some getting used to, but I've grown to love it. I really do like it here.
Yeah. I mean, I've been to San Diego a bunch of times and always enjoyed it. The Comedy Store in La Jolla performed there.
Great venue.
I enjoy. But one of my favorite things about San Diego is the San Diego Zoo. Have you been to the zoo yet? One of the greatest zoos in the world.
I don't think I have. I might have gone as a kid on like a school trip, but I don't think we ever. Yeah, I haven't been yet. I went to the SeaWorld. Yeah. SeaWorld was cool. SeaWorld was cool. I know that there's like some problems with like how they, I don't know. But anyways, I love SeaWorld.
We've seen the documentaries. Yes.
Yeah.
But I get it.
It's a cool place.
The zoo, unbelievable. You take the little bus thing, the little tram, and you're next to gigantic giraffes. And like you're within feet of these gigantic animals. It is fantastic. Alexis.
Yeah, I could care less. Google it. I see.
Alexis does not have, you know, the childish joy. That
I don't have the wonderment
Luca.
For that. I just told you my favorite part of the drive was an In-N-Out. So I think you know where my head's at. Put
Understood,
a giraffe in the
yeah,
In-N-Out.
Yeah.
Then I'll be impressed. How'd he get that job?
Yeah, it's a good one. All right. So, Luca, this has been an incredible look. Last season was great. I know you already scored one goal this season. But this season's been a little bit rougher of a start than I think what we're all used to for San Diego, even though we don't have a ton of data to support that. But what's the, now that there, you know, there's obviously a little bit, a few stumbles in this season. How has that been for you and for the team?
Yeah, obviously we're going through a tough moment right now. But we've got our core values to reflect on and, you know, just revert back to. So we're not stressing about it. We know that eventually it's going to come. We just need one of these results to go our way. And then, yeah, we'll be right back into, you know, how the public perceives San Diego. But our style of play is not going to change. We're going to keep being us and staying true to what makes us San Diego FC.
I'm curious about this. I don't know how much you can speak on it. But one of the weirder things this season was, I think San Diego having a stretch of, I think, like 4 or 5 games where a player got sent off. What's
Is there a red card wizard? Isn't that a thing?
I don't know what it is, but
I saw the
I'm
eyes.
Just curious. What's the locker room like when it's just like, man, again?
Are there fines? How do you like team fines?
How do you? I'm sure there's some like. I mean, it's serious and it's frustrating, but like, how do you guys joke about it, or how is there any levity when it comes to just like, how does this keep happening?
No, obviously we have a great locker room. There's banter going on, but like, you know, it's. I think we were just really unlucky in that stretch. And it's, you know, it's football, like the ball's round, anything can happen. So we're not, like I said, like we're not stressing on anything right now. It's going to come and eventually some of these calls that went against us are going to go for us later in the season and it'll all work out.
Okay. My grandmother always said it was getting the bad luck out of the way first. You want it now. You want it at the end. Yeah.
Not in the playoffs.
Turns out she wasn't 100% right, but maybe she is for you. Abuela, I'm sorry. My question for that is, those moments can be really stressful, especially when you're young, right? You're starting out. Mm-hmm. Maybe you make a mistake that leads to a goal. How do you release that? Like, what's Luca like after training? You got a lot of time to yourself as a football player. Do you play like jazz saxophone at home? Are you a gamer? Yeah. Like, how does Luca Bombino get away from the game for a minute?
Yeah, to get away from soccer, I actually start playing EAFC with the boys here, which is probably not a great release because I'm really still playing soccer.
I don't think you understand the getting away part.
you're getting yeah. about 3 inches away. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, if anything, I get more upset because, yeah, we're not that good.
Okay, okay.
We like to say we are, but we're not good at that game. We have a pro clubs team, and our goal is to try to make it to elite division, but yeah, it's difficult when you have so many butting heads.
You guys ever play with microphones? Like, do people know who they're playing against?
No.
Okay.
Thankfully.
Okay.
We play with a team name that's like not San Diego FC.
Right.
And none of our player titles are our own names, which is good. I think that would be a little bit cringy too, but
I'll lose my mind.
One of our players is called Michael Jackson. So that'll tell you the story.
There you go.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just like,
the new coach of Burnley.
Right. I saw that.
I'll just be like, yo, I just cut up Luca Bombino, bro. I'll be so proud of him.
No chance. I'm playing under an alias. Yeah, no chance.
How we feel about the player card?
If that comes out.
You like your player card?
It's okay. You know, if you do a couple like Evos on it in Ultimate Team, it gets up there. But yeah, it's not a good card. Okay. It's just not good.
We got to put you on the phone with EA. Yeah, like,
we'll
work.
We know a couple people, but yeah, we'll connect. We got
you. They might get mad. They might make me worse next year. I don't know.
Well, Luca, dude, obviously, best of luck and for the rest of the season. This has been awesome, man. It's great, I think, for us and then for our audience to get to know you and see just a different side of you, man. But we appreciate the time.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, all the best. I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
All right,
we
can't wait to make it out to San Diego.
Yeah, yeah.
We haven't been to a game yet.
Yeah. Yeah, awesome. We'd love to have you.
All right.
Awesome.
Cheers, man. Inter Miami are winless in their new stadium. Is their stadium cursed? How do you have Messi on your team and give up a 3-goal lead against your rival? We figure out who to blame and how they should fix this. Alexis, your first thought. How is this happening regularly at Inter Miami's new stadium?
I blame everyone behind Messi.
Oh, really?
Okay. And I don't care where Messi's standing. If he's if he's up front, everyone behind him. If he's in the midfield, everyone behind him. This is clearly like a capitulation, a constant capitulation at this point. Of the defending, which is a subject we've been talking about ad nauseum for the last few years. But it seems like without Busquets, without Jordi Alba, it's been highlighted even more, which is crazy because Busquets was really old when he was finishing his career in Inter Miami. And you would assume that another defensive midfielder would be better, and it hasn't happened.
No, I mean, my first thought, especially with this game against Orlando, like you're up three. You should, at the very least, get a point. I mean, that would still be disappointing.
Does Messi hate the home fans? What are we doing?
But you
here?
Can see the growing frustration. But their last four home matches, they have 3 draws and 1 loss, 9 goals allowed. They bring in the goalkeeper of the year.
One of the best goalkeepers besides maybe Blake. You know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to think of some names that would like rise to the top. Matt Freese had an incredible year last year.
Celentano.
Like, but yeah. Dude, Dave St. Clair is like top notch. Well, always, if he's not top three, he's top four every year in the league.
And we all know Dave St. Clair took less money to go to Inter Miami.
So you have to play with,
he wanted to see what the fuss was about.
Yeah, it was just a messy guy. Everyone was talking about.
You sort of realized, like, you know,
he was just like a massive Ian Frey fan, and that's why he did it.
I just love his story, man.
You know, it pulls at my heartstrings.
So, but the fact that, you know, I think it highlights the, you know, he was playing in a very defensively stout Minnesota United, you know, everybody would call them haram ball.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's a lobbing scorchers. They would always say that.
Yeah.
But this is, you know, having a very good goalkeeper, probably it helps when you have a very good defensive team, which Inter Miami are not. And to lose a game that you are up 3 goals is ridiculous.
That's without a red card, a major injury. Nothing happened. The same team that went up 3-0 lost 4-3.
This is arguably what happened, the famous remontada.
Yeah.
With that Barcelona were part of. Messi got to experience it in one game.
Yeah.
Up 3 goals. It's inexcusable. I'm gonna put the blame on the interim manager, Guillermo Hoyos.
Right.
The fact that you know, the drama around Mascherano leaving. We you know, when Kalen Kyle was here, we were talking about Tata Martino leaving. All they just leave for personal reason. Clearly, something is up.
Something's up. Something's going on behind closed doors that we don't know about.
And yeah, and so,
but that shouldn't affect. Obviously, a different manager, different head coach, definitely affects what happens on the pitch. But like, how comfortable do you think Messi was going back in that locker room, knowing that they had just given up, they lost after being up 3-0? This has to be fix this or else.
He left. Normally he sticks around on the pitch and trades a jersey with somebody. He's like, nobody's getting my jersey.
Not even on the team.
So I did love Martino Ojeda, like, who had the hat trick and had a fantastic game for Orlando.
His left foot goaded.
His left foot is goaded.
Right foot ghosted.
So I mean, I don't know if we can play it, but what was it? Orlando City also posted a hilarious like meme. They did like a meme, like shooting stars, kind of like elegant. They did one for like against Inter Miami. It was really funny. Go look it up.
Can I tell you real quick sidebar? What I love MLS teams are doing are like these like condensed.
Yeah, they did that.
Everyone looks like their children playing in a running slowly.
Yeah.
It is blowing my brain.
They did one of those.
It's blowing my brain, dude. I can't handle it. So it's so hard to watch.
Super funny. But Martino Ojeda, after the game, he was in his post-game interview on the field. He was mentioning how he was like, as an Argentinian, this is one of the most important games that I can play. But he did that out of like, he didn't say because Lionel Messi's on the pitch. He just said, like, as an Argentinian, this is an important game for me. And
I'm going to let you read between the lines.
I'm happy we played the way we played and didn't get too excited about it. Didn't get too disappointed about the early results. Remember, we were at the NYCFC game that where Crepo got the red card. They gave up 5 goals and stuff like that. So they had a rough start to the season, but they're just looking like it. Just really good form, especially after the departure of Oscar Pereja.
Who we love dearly, but clearly they've gotten a new manager bounce, if you will.
So credit to them, because it really looked like it was going to be a bad season, but Orlando have figured some stuff out.
But Miami clearly needs something, and it's crazy that a team that is filled with this many, just the wealth that is represented in their lineup. And again, I'm gonna say blame goes to MLS. If the owners want to spend money on players, don't give me like the machinations. They have to figure it out. Just let them do it. But we are in a position where a team that clearly has the desire and the need, and a player like Messi, you may be wasting this opportunity of having Messi in your league by not letting them go out and get the defensive help they need. But they are.
This is hilarious.
They had us in the first half.
With a picture of Martin Ojeda in a American football uniform. Yeah,
great. From the meme. Great thing. But like, obviously Miami need help. So we have to figure out who could they possibly bring in that can offer some help. And I can't imagine it's going to be an offensive player.
No, they need defensive help yesterday. Yeah. I mean, for me, because I mentioned the manager, I think that's the first thing. They have to sort out who is going to manage this club. There is a coach available that might be, I don't know if he necessarily fits the style, but he has a lot of success in Major League Soccer. Currently looking for work. Wilfred Nancy.
Oh.
I mean, I don't think it's crazy. I think he would bring in a very different playing style and ask a little bit more of the fullbacks, especially.
I mean, we're seeing it here, obviously. A very successful coach. MLS Cup winner in 2023, Leagues Cup winner in 2024. Amassed a pretty good record of 71 wins, 32 draws, 34 losses. And also just someone that I think represents what the best of MLS coaching looks like and feels like.
Sure.
Someone who has a system, has a methodology.
And pushing the league forward. And, pushing
and
the
also
play style forward.
The type of system where you plug and play, you can remove a player and bring someone else in, and suddenly that player plays up to that level. And it's because it comes from the coaching. Mm-hmm. So I would not disagree with this. But again, does Messi know who he is? And that we have to ask.
Sure.
But that is important. I mean, you can laugh all you want. And as crazy as that sounds, is that not, be honest, is that not really part of the consideration?
We're joking or exaggerating.
No,
really.
I'm not. But don't you think that's part of the consideration?
I mean, you think Messi going to be like, yeah, I feel like I've seen you somewhere, bro. Like, have you been on like the sideline?
Yo, no disrespect, but you look mad familiar, dog. Were you one of our center backs year one? I feel like I know you, Nancy.
I don't know, man. I got something from the concession stand at lower.com field. Yeah. Were you, that you?
Doug, do you live in Fort Lauderdale? Maybe I saw you in the stands. No, but I honestly, it's Messi. Even if he's not officially has to sign on the dotted line for a manager to be brought in, under no circumstances am I willing to believe that Inter Miami is willing to hire someone to manage this club that doesn't get at least a nod of approval from Lionel Messi. A conversation has to be had with
him. I agree. But then how much are we going to prioritize? We don't ignore what Messi wants. But then we also, if we're going to do that, then we also have to say, hey, is he the problem of why these coaches are not staying here very long? Is he forcing them to leave? Is he creating an environment? Remember, this is what LeBron used to get accused of like picking the coach and picking the play style and all this other stuff. Like, should we put that blame? If he's going to get the credit of like picking the coach, then I'm going to blame him for losing the coach.
Okay, and here's all I'll say, okay? It doesn't matter if they have a job or not. It doesn't matter if they're working or not. Pick the absolute greatest coach manager in world football that is currently available. I don't care if they work for a national team, they manage a national team, or a club. Who do you think is the greatest manager right now?
Pep.
Pep Guardiola. Yeah. Pep Guardiola is now coaching Inter Miami. And it's him or Lionel Messi. They have an argument. Who are you siding with if you are the league or if you're the owners of Inter Miami?
I'm going to side with Messi.
Okay. And that's the truth. That's the answer that I don't disagree with
because
you.
I know who my bread is, buddy.
Yeah, I'm sorry. And by the way, it's not an easy argument. It's not a cut and dry. Pep, it does bring you a lot. But at the end of the day, you go with the guy, Messi, the guy people are showing up to watch. Exactly. People aren't showing up to watch Pep. People are showing up to watch Messi. I probably would show up to watch Pep because I think he's the greatest manager of all time. But at the end of the day,
you're a dork.
Yeah, I'm a nerd when it comes to that stuff. But no one's buying a Pep Guardiola shirt. Everyone's buying a Lionel Messi shirt.
Right.
And that's it. So at the end of the day, yeah, you're 100% right. If it doesn't work out, which it didn't with Tata Martino twice in his career now, if it doesn't work out with Tata Martino or doesn't work out with the manager, will Messi get the blame? Sure. And that blame is very short. It's like, all right, well, don't do that again. Pick better next time. It's not you're not allowed to pick. Because at the end of the day, he's Lionel Messi. And I, as uncomfortable as that is to give the star player that much control, you kind of have to do it. Because you're not bigger. The league is not bigger than this man. The club is not bigger than this man. There's no badge on any shirt ever worn in the history of MLS. There's no name on the back of any shirt in the history of MLS. There is no person sitting in an office. There's nothing. There's no brand. There's no logo in the history of MLS that has ever been bigger, even if put together, than this man. It's just that sure. Situation you're in. He has all the leverage, so you have to let him pick.
All right, and your what do you think as far as like how to fix this?
I think I mentioned it earlier. I think Busquets, you know, he's one of those players where you don't really know what you're going to miss with a player like Busquets until he's gone. I watched a really good sort of journalist from back in the day talk about Busquets, and they had a video compilation of what he was saying, and he was like, Pep Guardiola was like given, he wasn't faster than anyone. He wasn't, you know, more athletic than anyone. He could barely jump, you know, compared to the other players. And Pep Guardiola was given the ability to be at pivote, the pivot, because he just understood where to go. Busquets also understood where to go and how to find space, but he was also willing to absolutely clear out anybody getting in his zone. Mm-hmm. He was a bit of a destroyer, probably not the person you think of as a destroyer, but he had that ability as well. And I think we saw some of that, sure, in a slower pace and older age. We saw that when he got in Miami. How do you replace that? Can you replace that with someone who has shown the ability to potentially score goals, the ability to make some good passes or at least go forward, but also the ability to really protect that back line? And I think you have to weigh it out more. You have to really protect the back line a lot more than I need you to be able to go forward, but that still has to be part of your game. I don't know that you're going to be able to find that in MLS, but I do think there's a guy playing at Manchester United right now who's having a pretty great season, but he's probably worn out his welcome, if not reached the age where you probably want to move on from him in the Premier League, which I think is perfect for Inter Miami, and that's Casemiro. Casemiro, I think, represents a player that, especially with the year he's having this year, if he was having the year he had last season, I may not be saying this, but the season he's having this year shows me that he is more than capable of handling the athleticism that we have in this league. And sure, if you're not a fan of MLS, you're probably going to laugh at this. We're looking at the Fabrizio Romano tweet about how they've been having these conversations since March. And I know LA Galaxy are also reportedly in the running for Casemiro, which I think if you're Casemiro, you could pick either team if you want. But maybe if you're not a fan of MLS, you're laughing at the idea that this league is athletic. But it's the one thing that I think stands out amongst a lot of other leagues is just how much hard running back and forth there is. And a guy like Casemiro is probably at the ripe age of being able to handle that, but also being able to provide some of those offensive threats, or at least the potential to move, shuttle the ball forward and still protect his back line.
I mean, I definitely would attribute like Casemiro closer to a stronger defender than Busquets, but incredibly smart player. Just incredibly smart player, controlling the ball, not losing the ball. They just need a little bit of stability. And like the fact that, like, even if it's, you know, it sounds like LA Galaxy are also interested, I think that's a terrible move for both parties. Casemiro playing also with a Marco Reus, who's also not really running that aggressively. And not even when he was at Dortmund was he known to really like be like tracking back. Yes, we saw the free kick he scored the other day. I mean, the dude, he still has it, and he still has a lot to offer. But I think them playing together, I think, sort of hurts them both. But Casemiro,
a lot like Messi Suarez in the sense of tracking back, right?
Right, right. So, yeah, I mean, you take a lot of risk. You give up something.
Feels like Suarez is done, right? After the season, did he announce
he
that
didn't
yet?
Announce that, but I would. Everybody sort
his
of
his knee doctors have said it multiple times.
Literally, when he's injecting the 2 foot long needle into his knee, he's like, "Bro, do you want to keep doing this?
You sure about this, my guy?" So,
no, but I think Casemiro at Inter Miami would actually be from a tactical move adding him to the roster, I think would be fantastic, because the mistakes that they're making and the defensive issues, I think he solves a little bit of that just by holding onto the ball a little bit more, to say the least. But the one thing I want to bring up about this, the winless streak at the new stadium, this is a much more deep lore in Major League Soccer, but this is very inside baseball.
The curse of the Bambino.
The curse of the Luca Bambino.
Yeah.
the curse of Franco Panizo. I don't know if you don't know this name. Franco is
we've known him since we started this podcast.
We know him a long time. Yeah. He used to work for Soccer by Ives.
Yeah. He was an SBI, like stalwart.
SBI Soccer. A kid. We met him when he was a kid.
Yeah.
Covering Major League Soccer. And
he doesn't pull punches, man. And he went and got a job at Inter Miami. And he was very critical of the team when needed to be.
Not a job at Inter Miami. He went to Miami to cover the team. So he doesn't work for the team. But he holds the team accountable.
He does.
Even before Messi got there, he was just always like, I'm going to...
During the Blaise Matuidi situation, he was also up front, front and center.
So we need journalists like this.
Yes.
And he's...
So well, he's, that means you don't work for Inter Miami.
They
could use your voice in the room because he was denied credentials.
I think this issue highlights maybe something, you know, that's wrong with American soccer, because people that are critical of teams or clubs of the league could be punished like this.
Yes.
I remember Grant Wall, RIP, talking about this in the past about, like, you know, there aren't many people that are covering American soccer, and then that also means there aren't many there are gatekeepers that can say, like, hey, oh yeah, I don't like the way you cover the team, so we're not going
to
give you a press credential.
It's hard to find unbiased voices willing to speak up when you're afraid of losing access, and now we have a clear-cut example of that.
Yeah, so Franco, it's all slightly funny, but it's frustrating also from a journalistic perspective, because Franco been covering the team a long time.
Well, they get a new stadium
and he is then denied a press credential.
And then what's happened since they moved to the new stadium?
They have not won since they moved to the new stadium, and he's been denied a press credential. A lot of people are saying, you want to fix this.
You want to lift that curse.
You want to lift the curse. Just give Franco his press credential.
See the spirits leave.
I can't say, you know, we don't know everything behind the scenes. I don't know if there's any justifiable reason why he would be denied a credential. From my understanding, I don't really think there is one. But the fact that the team will not give him that credential is kind of ridiculous. And you should be, look, you know how they said there's no such thing as bad press, but in sports, even if people are criticizing you, they're still talking about your team like that. You're still putting you in newspapers or on websites, or whatever. Like, that is not necessarily bad. So the interesting thing, and after the loss against Orlando, and I kind of agree with Franco on this. He tweeted, he was like, it's embarrassing. This is in the post-game press conference. It's embarrassing that they bring out all the young guys to answer.
That
the
is
press.
True. That is really frustrating.
None of the veteran players are, I guess they're not required to or whatever. I don't know the rules in MLS. I thought that if the press asked for a particular player like that, they are like most sports are like this. Like you have to answer a couple questions. When the Warriors lose a game, Steph Curry's like, yeah, man, he's out there. LeBron has to do it. So I don't really understand that.
They don't send the 16th guy on the bench.
And it's not fair. I mean, like there should be, and Messi has done this a couple times, with our friend Michele Giannone from MLS on Apple TV. And where he's had a couple moments and he's had interviews and talked about when Inter Miami is struggling, but he just picks and chooses. I don't know. And I'm not saying that it's Messi that has to do it, but
very critical of Messi in this segment.
Wow. I'm just saying it can't be Ian Frey. Be like, wow. Yo, you're the guy that has to. Alexis
I'm just
want-
worried that you're f***ing on my back. You know what I mean?
Alexis doesn't want our press credentials.
You know what I mean?
No, I'm just saying. I think it's a fair point to bring up from how the league is covered. Like, but, journalists shouldn't be punished for criticizing.
The last thing I'll say is I agree with you. I don't, in the sense that this is wrong and it should be rectified. And again, I don't know everything that's happened. So simply from the optics of it, this guy has been from day one covering this team. He moved. He's willing to do what it takes. There's no reason why he shouldn't be a part of what I assume is a much bigger press box. You know what I mean? It doesn't make sense. It's not like you don't have room for the guy.
So yeah, it's an odd situation, but look, if you're gonna have the biggest player in the world playing on your team, you're gonna get attract interest from journalists and the media and stuff like that, and that's what you want. Yeah. For your, because you're paying a whole ton of money, you would imagine you just want a lot of people watching and stuff like that. So it's an odd decision. I don't know again if there's any valid reason for it. But
maybe
again,
Casemiro answers some questions.
So we shall see. Let's wrap up there. Shout out to Paul Tenorio. Shout out to Luca Bombino. Action packed. Show today. Everybody's coming
just
through.
The standard Cooligans.
I mean,
yo, for our birthdays, Luca
and Paulie. And
Paulie T came out.
They were like, yo, we gotta hang out with the Cooligans on their
Remember
birthdays.
Paulie T doing like keg stands at our first birthday? Well, Tenorio parties, dude.
He did. Hopefully his wife does not hear this.
You don't even there's no way to prove it's not true.
Okay. So. It was not me. Paul was just hanging out with Klay Thompson, bro. He wasn't doing anything wrong.
Nothing wrong with that, right? Put in the comments everything you think is wrong with that.
All right. Shout out to both of them. Thank you both. Go pick up Paul Tenorio's book. And I don't know if Luca Bombino wrote any books, but go pick up one up if he did.
You know what? Go steal his diary from his mom's house.
Just take his journal. So, as always, thank you so much for listening. Make sure you follow us everywhere at Soccer Cooligans on all socials. If you're listening to this, go over to the YouTube, hit like, hit subscribe, and hit the hype button, as Alexis always says.
Oh, please do that. That's very important.
There's some sort of hype
button. The last video I asked, we got 6 hypes.
Look at that. Look at all the
hypes. That's a lot of hypes.
Touch all the hypes, everybody.
Ooh, okay. All right. Calmate, bro. Make sure you get consent first.
This is the consent. Hit my hype button.
Damn. All right, if you're going to do that to me, just slowly, okay?
Okay. Get me ready, boy. Anyway, thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you on, we'll see you on Thursday with a brand new episode. We got a lot coming up. We're about a month away, a little over a month away from the World Cup. The show's going to get crazy. We got a bunch of incredible guests, a lot going on. So stay locked into the Cooligans. I promise you will enjoy it.